Okay, good morning, everyone. Nice to be back. Everybody got a sheet? Packet? Okay, so the first thing you'll notice is it's a little bit thicker than yesterday's. I was so embarrassed last week. Professor Rosenzweig came with this whole booklet, and I had this measly little piece of paper. So I needed to up my game a little bit, so I gave you a thicker packet. We're not going to use any of it. I just wanted to give you a thick packet. Just a thick pack. Okay, now we will get to some of the things on the other side of the sheet, Mirtz Hashem, as we go along. Okay, quick review of what we did last week. Last week we started with the Medrash, the Gemara, really, which says, Hashem says to Moshe, Matana Tova Yeshli Beveis Ginzi, I have a great gift in my treasure house, Ushavis Shma, Anim Vakesh Litnot Li Yisrael. I want to give this gift to the Jewish people. Go tell them. And we discussed that there's clearly something about Shabbos beyond what we're told, beyond that which is obvious, something in a treasure house, something that is a great gift, something that needs to be revealed in order to understand what it is. We discussed the idea, the Gemara says how Echad Mishishim, there are a number of things that are considered 1/60th, and one of them was Shabbos is a 60th of Olam Haba. So besides for the severity of Shabbos, as the Mishnah Berurah discussed, the significance that anyone who keeps Shabbos is as if he keeps all of Torah, anyone who violates Shabbos is as if he violates all of Torah, and the number of times that the Torah speaks about Shabbos. So we were aimed at, yesterday we began our discussion of trying to figure out, unraveling this idea of why and how Shabbos is a little bit of Olam Haba. We quoted the Medrash at the end yesterday, if you remember, last week, how when Hashem promises the Jewish people, when he gives them the Torah, he says, there's going to be great reward. And they said, show me something. Show me, give me a hint. How do I know that there's going to be great reward? And what did Hashem reveal to them? Shabbos. He said, that's how you know that there's going to be great reward, is this experience of Shabbos. Okay, so what we did last week, was we were going to discuss, we introduced that there are four major places where the Torah talks about Shabbos. Not just a one-liner of keep Shabbos. Four descriptions, discussions of Shabbos. And they were, number one, of course, was gracious in the very beginning, which we started last week. Number two, somebody said it last week? Before that. With the man, the first time the Torah, the Jewish people are told about Shabbos as a people is when the man falls 3 days into their journey into the desert. We're going to take a look at that, Mirtz Hashem, next week. And number three was the Mishkan. Really, that's not true. Number three was Seres Hadibros. And then number four is the Mishkan. Those are the four where the Torah actually invests time to tell us the story, tell us something about Shabbos. So we start, we're going to go through all four of those in depth. We're going to learn the psukim of where, how the Torah describes Shabbos. Through that, as we discussed last week, we'll hopefully then flesh out the Chazals, the Midrashim, on the idea of Shabbos. We're going to do it through the psukim. We're going to learn the psukim. And so we started last week really just introducing. So I brought you on the sheets that you have in front of you today, I repeated the psukim that we started with yesterday. So I'm going to go through them quickly and mention the questions that we brought out last week to jump in. And those questions were as follows. Vayechulu ha-shamayim v'ha-aretz v'chol tzvam. It's on the top of what's labeled sheet number three, source number five. Vayechulu ha-shamayim v'ha-aretz. So number one, this idea of vayechulu is a word that we're going to have to understand. The Torah uses that word to describe the completion of Hashem in creation. And it's not a word that appears frequently in Chumash as a completion, where it's used here twice, Vayechal Elokim. So we're going to have to understand what that is. Vayechal Elokim b'yom ha-shvi'i melachto asher asa. So number one, what we see from the psukim is this idea of completion in the language of Vayechulu. I'll just sort of introduce, as one part of our discussion, where else is the shorish of the word Vayechal or Vayechulu used? Almost in an opposite way. It's used in the language of destruction. Complete destruction is vayichal or vayikale is also a language of destruction. It's a double usage over here as well. Okay, we'll get back to that in a moment. Okay, we have not, point number one is the world is completed. There's a completion, and it's done by Yom Hashvi'i Melachto Asher Asa. Another point just to raise, which I don't think we touched on last week. This is the first time we have the word malacha. Every time you have the first in the Torah is an important thing. The word malacha does not appear in the 6 days of creation. It doesn't appear like on day one, that here's the malacha I'm going to do today. Just Hashem, vayomer Elokim, vayomer Elokim, vayomer Elokim. On day seven, when Hashem completes it, it's described as a malacha. How would you translate malacha? work. Does that or does that not fit to describe something that Hashem would do? Is that would we have thought that that should be an appropriate word? And we're used to it, but that requires, that's going to be another thing. Is that the best word to describe that what Hashem, when he created the word, I would call it malacha. I would have called it creation. That's what the word the Torah uses, Vayivra Elokim, Hashem created, Bereishis Bara Elokim. Malacha? Malacha? I don't know. So we'll have to see, but the Torah uses that word, and we're of course familiar with that because we know what we're not allowed to do on Shabbos are referred to as the 39 malachas. We know this. So the word is going to appear a lot, but it's of note, the first time we see it here in these psukim is that that's what's described as what Hashem did was called a malacha. Kol melachto asher asa. Vayishbos b'yom ha'ashvim yikol melachto asher asa. Then we spoke about last week this idea of vayishbos, which means rest, to cease, to stop, to abstain, a bunch of different words. But the main point that we need from that is, was that a by chance or was that purposeful? When Hashem rests, Vayishbos Bayom HaShvi'i, the Torah is describing as a very purposeful action of Vayishbos. I'm done, rather than I happened to finish, so I stopped. The Torah does not describe Hashem happened to finish, so he was done. Vayishbos Bayom HaShvi'i. There was a very active Shvisa on the seventh day. And then, of course, we have Vayivarech Elokim es Yom HaShvi'i Vayikadesh, so Hashem blesses and sanctifies, which we discussed last week. I'll have to figure out what that means, to be blessed, to be sanctified. Kivot Shavas Mikom Melachto. Again, the Torah repeats, because on this day Hashem rested or abstained, ceased from all of the Melachah. Okay, so we have a number of points, a number of questions on this opening series of Psukim. And, of course, what is not here in these opening Psukim of Vayichulu? What is not described or mentioned at all? Which is an obvious thing why it's not mentioned, because who's not yet in the world at this point? The Jewish people, Adam is created on day six, of course, but there's no element of one of the things that we view most important about Shabbos, which is our bris, the oaths, the covenant, the connection that we have to Shabbos. When the Torah first introduces us to Shabbos, what's the focal point? God. Yeah. It has nothing to do with us. It has nothing to do with mankind, nothing to do with the covenant between God and mankind. It is all about Hashem's creation, Hashem stopping to create, Hashem's purposeful resting on the first day. Okay, so we have a lot to discuss. So what I'd like to do in general is focus on three commentators, two medieval classic Rishonim, Rashi, and of course the Ramban. Those are our two most classic. And then a contemporary Rav Hirsch. And use that, all the psukim that we're going to, the four different aspects of Shabbos, you know, we could spend, you know, years on it, but we'll focus on those three as we go through with additional comments from some others, but those are the ones that we're primarily going to be learning as we go through. So before we break down the way that Rashi, the Ramban, and Rav Hirsch attack these three psukim, famous psukim, Vayichulu Hashem Yivarech V'chol Tzva'am, I want to start a little bit backwards. Let's go to even a more contemporary source. I will go a little bit out of order on its source number 11 on your sheet. This is a sefer that we're going to be, I'd like to focus a lot on as we go through some time together. Shabbos Malkus, that's a wonderful sefer written by Reb Shimshon Pinkus, Zichrono Livracha, who describes in his work, what is this gift? What is this secret about Shabbos? And I want to take from his Hakdama, this one paragraph from his Hakdama. We're going to use that then as a springboard and then look through the way the Mefarshim see this Psukim to sort of see how it comes out of the Psukim the way that he describes it. This is a very important description which we will reference a number of times. Shabbos b'hakdarasa hamiduyekesi. What is the most exacting definition? What is Shabbos? What is Shabbos? Yomo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's Hashem's day. That's what it is. You want to know, what is Shabbos? I always like to use the example. You're sitting on a plane, and either a non-observant Jew or a non-Jew is sitting next to you, and they say, oh, you look like you're an observant Jew. And you're like, oh, I wanted to go to sleep. And they're like, no, I want to talk to you. And they say, like, I live in this community. I see people, like, on Shabbos. It's raining. No one's carrying umbrellas. It's so weird. And they're walking in the streets always. Are you not allowed to walk on the sidewalk on Shabbos? Like, what's the deal? I got all these important questions about Shabbos. Like, what is this day that requires you to walk without umbrellas in the street when it rains? I don't understand. So you're like, okay, how do I answer Shabbos? How do you, like, what do you say? So in its most simple definition, says Rav Pinkus, It is Yomo Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Below Kol Shem Levaye Acher, without any other description, any other nickname, you don't need anything else. It's the day of the Ribono Shel Olam. Yom Shebo Yichud Hashem Mispashet Al Kol Amitzius. The day that the Yichud Hashem, which is its mitzvah unto itself, one of the six mitzvahs that we have all 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, to believe Hashem Elkeinu Hashem Echad, which is the big mitzvah, which is not our discussion, but that concept that Hashem is Echad, is Nispashet, spreads out, so to speak, expands throughout all of the world, all of Mitzius, all of existence. V'chol ha-nivra shoves uvatel. And therefore, everything that's created is shoves. Of course, that word ceases, stops, abstains, rests, uvatel. Literally, most literal definition of vatel would be to be like nullified. Everything else in the world stops. Ve'ein od milvado. And there is nothing else in the world on Shabbos other than presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That is its definition. And we're going to spend the next 5 weeks together working through the psukim, seeing how this comes out. But in its most basic definition, it's the day of Hashem. It's the day that his Yichud Hashem spreads and becomes revealed, and everything else stops. Everything else stops so that we see Ein Od Milvado. I want to read one more paragraph from Rav Pinkus' introduction. Vahavein, understand. She'ena kavana shu yom she'ikaro hasagas dveikus basha. That doesn't mean that our job is to become davuk, to cling, to ascend spiritual heights. That's not what we mean at all. Ain't okay. It's not true. Amnam vade b'Shabbos masigin. It's true on Shabbos you can achieve dveikus. On Shabbos you can achieve spiritual heights that you could not achieve on any other day. That's just something which comes out of the day. That's not the purpose of the day. It's not a day which was set up so that a Jew can connect to Hashem and achieve dveikus. That happens on Shabbos. Kevan sheba osyom ein on milvado. Since if you understand the day well, you see clearly the essence, the presence of Hashem in a way that you don't see. What happens when a Jew sees that reality? They connect more. That's what happens. But einze etzem ham, that's not the purpose. That's not the essence of the day. She'im tomar kein, if we would say so, shuv nimtzeis omer shu yom litzarchenu anu. It would turn out that Shabbos is really for us. It was a day created for the Jew to connect to Hashem. That's not true. That's not true. Ein hadavar kein she'ein etzem hamohus litzorach Yisrael klal. The purpose, the essence of the day is not for the tzorach Yisrael, not for the purpose of the Jewish people. Shaharei rak acher shehaisa kfar kedusha Shabbos ba'olam. And what's the proof to that? The medrash that we started with. What does Hashem say to Moshe? I have this great gift, and I need to give it to the Jewish people. Meaning, after there's such a concept called Shabbos, Oz Nitna Hili Yisrael bin Matana, who is the most worthy, deserving people to receive this gift? That's us. Aval Etzem Mahusa Shabbos Hikula Mitzido. The essence of Shabbos is really from Hashem's perspective. Yom Shehakol Botel Umivutol. Everything stops, everything ceases. And Hashem is alone in his world. He's a yachid, not alone in the sense, but he's singular, I should say, in his world. Sula, you don't need anything else. It's a day in which that is going to become clear, that Hashem is echad. The day that a Jew can perceive that is on Shabbos. And then we have all the things that are going to flow from there. We're going to get back to this definition because there's a lot to unpack in what he just said, but we're going to hopefully see it through the psukim and come to an understanding a little bit more of that. Let's jump in. Let's go back to the psukim, and hopefully this will become a little bit clearer as we work it through. Okay, let's start with Rashi. Oh, we start with Rashi. First thing that Rashi is troubled by in our psukim, the first pasuk Rashi has nothing to say. Vayechulu Hashemayim v'ha'aretz v'chol tzvam. Hashem completed heaven and earth and all of his hosts. Rashi does not say anything. But the next pasuk Rashi is very troubled. We introduced this question as well yesterday. How do you translate that first phrase? Vayechal Elokim bayom hashvi'i melachto asher asa. How would you translate? Simplest translation. When did Hashem finish? By Yom Hashvi'i, which would mean on the seventh day. The most simple translation of Vayichal Elokim Bayom HaShvi'i. And I asked you, stop right there. When did Hashem finish working? On that phrase, Vayichal Elokim Bayom HaShvi'i. When did he finish working? On the seventh day, on Shabbos. That's the most literal, basic translation of that phrase. If you had that phrase in a vacuum, and you translated it any other way then Hashem finished on the seventh day, I would say that's not a good translation. It means he completed on the seventh day. And then the next phrase is, Vayishbos Bayom HaShvi'i Mikom Malachto, which would mean that he stopped, that he ceased, he refrained from working on the seventh day. So the first problem that Rashi is troubled by is, when did he finish creation? Because from the first phrase of Vayichal Elokim Hayom HaShvi'i would imply that he was working already into the seventh day, and it was on the seventh day that he completed his work. The next phrase of Vayishbos Bayom HaShvi'i says, no, on the seventh day he was finished and he completed. So which one is it? So Rashi gives us two explanations. Says Rashi in source number 6, first from Reb Shimon, quoting from the Medrash. Basar v'dam, a regular human being, a person. Eni odeya itav v'rga'av. We don't know time so well. We have today fancy time. We have atomic clocks. We know exactly what's going on. But even as much as 40 years ago, 50 years ago, would you ever know exactly what time it is? No, it's not possible. 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago, it's not possible. Tzarech lehosif mechol al hakodesh. So what does a person need to do, a regular Jew, as far as Shabbos goes? You need to add a little bit from chol, from the weekday, to Shabbos, in order to make sure that you're in the clear, because you don't know. Hakodesh Baruch Hu sheyodeya itov v'ragav. However, Hashem, who knows, nichnas bo kechut asa'ar. He entered into Shabbos like a hair's breadth. V'nira ki'ilu kila bo bayom. So it looked like, what was he working up to? When we say, I was working right up to Shabbos. So what do we mean when we say that? I was like, all right, up to Shabbos, last minute. So we're going to get to this in a moment, what comes out of the halacha from this Rashi. We're going to start from the Pesukim and work our way through. But when we say that, we don't mean like literally up to Shabbos. We put in several stopgap measures to make sure that we don't actually do that. But when Hashem was creating the world and he was working for the 6 days, when did he stop on the sixth day? Until, was he like working up like 18 minutes before the end of the sixth day? Did he have 40 minutes? Was he like in Yushalayim telling? When did he work? So says Reb Shimon, Reb Shimon created for 6 days. Until when did he work? Until that moment when day six shifted into day seven, that's when he was working. So it looked like he was still working until the seventh. This is Reb Shimon's. So that's explaining the two. So one pasuk implies he was working on the seventh. One pasuk implies one phrase that he was done. And it looked that way. What was he really doing? No, he only worked up to the sixth. And then from the beginning of the seventh, he was done. But, you know, it's hard for us to see or perceive that. Okay, that's how Reb Shimon, as Rashi quotes, understands the two pasukim. La halacha, what comes out of this, not necessarily just out of this, but there is a concept, there are two concepts in halacha which we'll mention. I brought it on the sheet in source 10, but I want to go through the whole thing because we have so much to do in so little time. But the Shulchan Aruch paskins in source number 10 on the top of your second sheet, that yesh omrim shetzorich lohosif meyachol ala kodesh, using the same language that Rashi just told us, there are those that say in halacha, and we paskin this way, that you have to add from chol to Kodesh. You have to take part of Friday, which is Chol, and make it Kodesh. The Mishnah Brewer adds, right in the next paragraph you see, Bein b'chnisaso, Bein b'yitziaso. And this applies on both ends of Shabbos. In the beginning and in the end, we don't deal like ourselves, like the Ribbono Shel Olam, exactly here, exactly. We add a little bit of Friday into Shabbos, and we add a little bit of Motzeh Shabbos into Shabbos. We take on both sides. Now the way that this works, again, without going through the whole thing inside, we do it on two levels. We have a concept called, you ever notice why Shabbos is 25 hours? Like it should be 24 hours. This is for sure one of the questions they would ask you on the plane sitting next to you, like, why is it so long? If it's one day, it's 24 hours. Everybody knows a day is 24 hours. Why is Shabbos 25 hours every year? And it's because of this idea that's being described over here, because we have a concept called Bein Hashmashos, between sunset and nightfall. Is that day or is it night? Where it's a major, major discussion in halacha, which is not for our discussion. But what's relevant is we go stringently on both ends. so that on Friday, starting already at sunset, we're concerned, maybe it's Shabbos, when as soon as sunset, it's already considered the next day. So we start Shabbos at sunset, and then we end Shabbos 24 hours later, not at sunset, but then we push it till nightfall. So that period of time between sunset and nightfall, what we call Bein HaShemashos, after Shkia, Tzoltzeis, so on Friday, we include as part of Shabbos, and on Motzi Shabbos, we also include as part of Shabbos. So we go from sunset on Friday all the way till nightfall after Shabbos. When it's nightfall, sorry, 42 minutes, 50 minutes, 60 minutes, 72 minutes, whatever you want to say is a different topic for a different time in terms of how long you have to wait. But that's why it ends at 25 hours, because we're including that, because we don't know. We don't know when Shabbos actually starts, and we're not taking any chances, so that we are stringent on both ends to already assume it's Shabbos early on Friday, and we wait on Motzei Shabbos. That's separate from the idea of being Mosif Mechol Alok. In addition to that, when we say Shabbos starts, that's at Shkia, sunset. At that point already, you have to assume it's Shabbos. And then we add Mechol Al HaKodesh, we add from weekday to Shabbos, and that's where the different communities have different customs. The most prevalent outside of Israel is, of course, 18 minutes, in which we then add 18 minutes with candle lighting, so that not only am I already starting Shabbos with sunset, because I don't know exactly when Shabbos starts, but maybe because that whole period is unclear between sunset and nightfall, so I'm stringent there, and I add a little bit before that as well. All of that's what's going on as far as that goes. What Rashi is commenting is that when Hashem created on day 6, so there was a sliver of time that we switched from day 6 to day 7. Hashem worked all the way till that point, so it looked like he was working on Shabbos, but really he wasn't working at all. Okay, all of that is explanation number 1. Let's get to explanation number 2. Says Rashi, back in source number 6, second line in Rashi, Dover Acher, Dalet Aleph, says Dover Acher, another explanation. Again, what's the problem? The problem is it sounds like Hashem created something on day 7. Because it says, Vayichal Elokim b'yom hashvi'i. He concluded his creation on the 7th day. Says Rashi, Ma haya ha'olam chaser. What was the world missing after the 6 days of creation? It was missing one thing, says Rashi, quoting from Chazal again, Menucha. We didn't yet have rest. 6 days was work, work, work. We're leaving aside what it means that Hashem was working for 6 days. We're going to get to that later, the word malacha. But for 6 days, Hashem is creating, 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 creating. What's missing? Concept of menucha. Ba Shabbos, ba menucha. With the advent of Shabbos came the concept of Shabbos. Kolsa v'nigmara hamalacha. So Rashi then uses the word kolsa from the word vayichulu. Now something was complete. The world now had what it didn't yet have, which is the concept of menucha. And therefore, what's pshat? Vayichal Elokim b'yom hashvi'i, that Hashem concluded his work on the 7th day. What's the pshat? He did. He created menucha. Now, you're all thinking, isn't menucha just like work, 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 and then I stop? Is that a creation of the concept of menucha, or is menucha simply the absence of physical exertion? I would just the absence. No, you need to know, in the beginning, first Rashi tells us, what's pshat? Vayichal Elokim b'yom. What did he create on the 7th day? Created a concept of menucha. We're going to get back to this, obviously, because that is a critical element of this creation. Okay, let's take a look at before we get to the Ramban. Let's take a look at some of Rav Hirsch's comments on these ideas that we've already addressed through Rashi. I was not sure how to do this exactly. Rav Hirsch online, you can find in Hebrew. So I could have cut and pasted just the lines that I wanted in Hebrew, but his concepts are hard enough. I didn't want to do it in Hebrew. But the only way to do it in English was to actually photocopy from the Sefer, which then creates a lot and in underline. So I hope this works. If not, you can let me know. Maybe next time we'll do just the Hebrew. But we'll start with this. Okay, let's start with... on page 54, and then the top corners, you see the pages of Rav Hirsch. It's written as a chumash, so it goes from right to left, even though it's in English, so it's a little bit backwards, but we'll try to work it through. So I tried to label the paragraphs as we'll go along. Let's start with paragraph number 1, vayichulu. Let's start with this word, which again, Rashi did not address. What does the word vayichulu mean? So it first points out that the root kala, everyone see where I am? Paragraph one. The root kala combines two meanings that at first glance seem antithetical. They're actually opposites. The word kala means to be destroyed. Like, va'atem b'nei Yaakov, lo chilisem. I have not completely uprooted and destroyed you. The word kala is to be undone, ruined. At the same time, kala means to reach the highest perfection of existence, as in kala habayis, l'chol dvarav. The house was complete. Vayichulu ashamayim. So you have one word, which is both completion and destruction. So he describes in the second paragraph, which we'll describe outside, you can read it outside alone, that there are actually two truths which exist at the same time. Number one, if you try to become perfect in anything, if you try to become perfect in something, you can only be perfect, he suggests, outside of the Ribbono Shel'olam, if you completely devote yourself to one aim to the exclusion of all other things. Meaning, he who wishes to be perfect in various things at the same time will succeed in all of them only partial. I'm reading the second paragraph, which is not underlined. So if you want vayichulu, perfection vayichulu, together with that at the same time is the language of destruction, meaning I have to push aside other things in order to be perfect here. I need to not focus on other things in order to achieve what I want here. And in the language on the other side, when there is destruction, when something is pushed aside, there's no such thing as absolute destruction. It's only relative, meaning whatever you destroy just gets transferred to some other form or some other explanation. So that when I try to achieve perfection, I'm doing a couple of different things. On the one hand, whatever I'm focused on, I need to push aside other things. But whenever you push aside other things, if anything is destroyed, it really just reappears in some other form. Like energy can never be destroyed. Things in the world, they just shift. What's the relevance of all of this? Going to paragraph number two, underline the basic conception, therefore, of kala vayichulu is to strive toward a goal. Meaning, it's action that's purposeful of trying to attain perfection. Tachlis, the word that we say, like tachlis ma'asecha, we'll see in Friday night when we daven Shmona Esrei, is a purpose, the purpose of all of creation, striving towards a goal. The next underlined section, thus kala, the word vayichulu is to yearn for a goal, which is why the word kli, Refersh always likes to talk language. The word kli is an object that serves a particular purpose. And kala, last underlined line, means to bring to an objective. Vayichulu in our verse would mean they were brought to the goal. So it's not just creation for the sake of creation. There was some type of perfection, some type of goal that there was an attempt towards achieving when you were creating. It was a vayichulu of pushing all other things aside in order to achieve this perfection. Meaning it was directed, purposeful in order to achieve its goal. If you look, for example, at the very top of the page at the way the Rav Hirsch translates the pasuk, Vayichulu Hashemayim Arts V'chol Tzva'am, which, like, if you look in any art scroll, will be translated as thus heaven and earth were finished or completed. How does Rav Hirsch translate the whole phrase? It was brought to their intended completion. Not just that there was work done and it was finished. Creation, heaven and earth, was brought to its intended completion. He points out on the top of the next page, on page 55. He points out, how does the Chumash begin? Bereshis bara Elokim Shemayim v'yasa aretz. So he points out, and where do we next see that phrase of Shemayim v'aretz? Where does that phrase next appear? It appears in the opening line of creation, Bereshis bara Elokim Hashemayim v'yasa aretz, and then at the end, Vayichulu Hashemayim v'aretz. Yeah.
So my question is, when why is a bride called a kala?
I guess working towards perfection. I would focus on that side versus the other side, probably, right?
Why is it not?
It's totally fair. I'm not sure. I'm not. Yeah, we can. We'll add it. We're not finished with vayichulu.
No,
but
it makes sense. Like, if you know, like a boy, like a husband is supposed to, right, like leave his parents and go towards his bride. So a bride is also she's kind of pushing everything else aside.
And creating a new unit. Well, I mean, I would think it would be along those lines in the same way that when a child is born, that child is now an extension, so to speak, of the parents, meaning that the child's identity is as a child, and when she becomes a kala, and the chasen are now creating their own, and their own home. They're starting a new unit, as opposed to just having that primary identity of being a child. Now you're now half of something that's whole. I would assume it'd be something like that. That's for Sheva Brachas Torah. That'll be another source in terms of why. But it's fair. In other words, Rav Hirsch is very big on all of the similar words that maintain and having similar meanings. And but we're not finished with Vayichu, so hopefully we'll be able to get back to that. Yeah.
Not to change the subject, but with Malacha.
We're getting there. Rav Hirsch Mamish says that 100%. We're getting there. Okay, back to top of 55. Back to top of 55.
So, in order to have completion, which the definition for completion is perfection with nothing else, isn't that our goal for serving Hashem?
I assume the answer is yes. I mean, was there something not fit with that yet, or?
No. So that's the only time we could actually have perfection if we threw everything else out of the window and said ein od movado.
Correct. He will touch on that language of a directed again. What he's focusing on is what I think you're picking up on is that vayichulu has a language of also destruction, and in Rav Hirsch's understanding is, because in order to be really focused on something, you must push other things aside. You cannot be wholly focused on whatever the task is in front of you if you're also focused on other things. And that's sort of that that language.
And if I may, you're going to have the opposite. You're going to have total destruction.
If you're focused on multiple things,
if your life is not totally focused on Hashem and you're not pushing everything else aside, then your life is going to be destruction.
Could be. I can hear where that would happen. You need to be. Who did Einstein say the famous line that might be inappropriate for me to say? If you're driving a car and kissing a girl, I know for sure you're doing one of those not well. I think that's not my line. It's not my line. Yeah. I think that's but that's right. You cannot claim I'm doing both of those tasks well if you're doing them at the same time. Like, there's no chance. So, you know, you pick and choose. So Vayichulu has a language of destruction and completion, because if you want to be complete, you have to, so to speak, destroy or push away other things. But in the context of Vayichulu HaShamayim, it was, this was my intention, and it's solely focused on bringing the world to its completion. Back to the top of page 55. This verse is like, I'm never going to be invited back to speak here again. That was my way out. This verse is the concluding statement of the history of creation, meaning it parallels the opening statement. We started with Bereishis Bara Elokim Es Hashamayim Va'aretz, and then we're done. Vayechal Elokim Vayechulu Hashamayim Va'aretz. Those two things. Heaven is skipping to the next underlying part. Heaven and earth were brought to this completion, meaning they had not always existed, but rather were brought into existence. Now, we take this for granted because we're believing Jews. Rav Hirsch is picking it up from the Psukim. Why is the Torah highlighting Vayichulu HaShamayim V'Ha'aretz? Because there was a purpose in its creation. It did not just happen on its own. It wasn't a natural process that was not directed. It was brought into existence and brought into creation. The cause, I'm going to just read the highlighted parts that we could work through it. The underlying part. The cause of existence of heaven and earth does not lie in themselves. It was not created out of itself. They are not the cause of their having come into existence. They are not the result of some force working blindly, but the creative work of a lone creator who created them with intention and purpose. That is Vayichulu. Now, again, without getting into the Big Bang and how Hashem created the world, it is not a contradiction to say that the way that Hashem did it is through the Big Bang. But why did the Big Bang happen is the question that Rav Hirsch would be saying, and that Jews would believe. Like, it's not there's no problem believing in science. Science is a general big proof of the presence of the Ribbono Shel'olam. It didn't just happen on its own because randomly it happened because Bereishis Bara Elokim et Hashamayim. How? There's no problem with saying, like, this is how he did it. What's the source? How did that initial energy create? Why? Who? How did it function? That's how the Ribbono Shel Olam did it. But it started with a Bereishis Bara Elokim, and it was concluded when it was brought to its intended purpose of Vayichulu Hashamayim V'Haaretz. Now, these next two points are extremely important with our entire discussion. Paragraph 4. Chazal described this concept in a Medrash. Hamasim hayu moischin v'holchin. Hamasim, meaning all of this matter and forces, were in a continuous state of development, meaning they were moischin v'holchin. They were continuously to work, to develop, until Hashem says, v'aychulu. We're done. Friday came, the work that was being done. Shabbos comes, finished. Die. Ha'olam, the reason why I call one of Hashem's name is Kel Shaddai, the Chazal Darshan from the word, Sha'omer le'olamo, die. That he said to his world, enough. Why is that so significant? Sha'omer le'olamo, die. That he said to his world, done. It says in Rav Hirsch's language, meaning until Hashem called out Vayichulu, he set a limit to their development. The next of that paragraph, he quotes the Medrash that I just said, Sha'omale omar, die. Had he not said die, so it would just continue to develop. That then is the most significant point of all of this, that there was a concept of creation that was moving, and then he said, stop, finish, Shabbos. The ending, paragraph 5, the ending of creation, the cessation of formation of new creations, in a word, meaning the presence of Shabbos, is a greater revelation of the Creator than of the very existence of heaven and earth. This line should have double underlined. It's so important. Define Shabbos in a way, even when I was just seeing this and preparing it, it was such clarity. The concept of creation, as we know, does the presence of the world prove the Ribbono Shel Olam's presence? You're hesitant to answer, which is fine. The answer is no, because people deny it. We know that there's an entire scientific world of which has existed from the times of the Ramban, in which the Ramban described, there are those who believe ha'olam kadmon, the world always existed and it was always here, all the way until modern scientific times where people would say, there's no creator, it just happened. So we look at a world, they look at a world, and you can say, were any of us there 6,000 years ago when another was created, 15 billion years, whatever, we're going to figure out time, all of those questions. So it's, you know, it's everyone's trying to figure it out. First is the most powerful insight. If it was a continuous process, it's the concept of being able to say, stop! And everything is shoves umivutal. Everything comes to a standstill. That's the proof that there is a purposeful creator behind it who can say, Vayichulu, we're done. Because if it's a natural progression, then there's no end. It's just everything is constantly as it is. The ability to say, Ad kan, ha'omer li'olamo, die. And everything stops. And Hashem's presence is revealed in Rav Hirsch's language. It's a greater revelation of the Creator than the existence of heaven and earth, where you can say was always there, but it's in the ability to be a vayishbos. And we're going to see in this concept, going back to that opening paragraph from the Hakdama of Rav Shimshon Pinkos and Shabbos Malkusa, when the world stops is the greatest revelation. I want to jump to bring out this point to a medrash that Rav Pinkos brings.
It's,
what's that?
One question.
What's that? Let me just finish the thought. Source number 12. Source number 12. I need to make sure that we get to this, so however far we get, we cover this. This is a medrash which is discussing Kabbalah Satorah, not creation of the worlds, But you'll see as Rav Pinkus uses it to describe what we just learned and Rav Hirsch just described. Amar Rabbi Avoh b'shem Rabbi Yochanan. Kishenasan HaKadosh Baruch Hu Esa Torah. The time that Hashem gave the Torah. Again, we're talking at Har Sinai now. Tzipur lo tzavach. There was not a bird that chirped. Oaf lo parach. There was not a bird that flapped its wings. Shur lo ga'ah. An ox did not bray. Ofanim lo afu. The angels, the ofanim, did not do whatever angels do. Srafim lo amru kadosh kadosh. The srafim did not say kadosh kadosh kadosh. Hayom lo nizdaza'ah. The sea did not roll its waves. Habrios lo dibru. People did not speak. Elaha olam shosek umacharish. The world was entirely silent. Of course, that word shosek, quiet, macharish, total silence. V'yotza hakol, and the voice comes out, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. In this medrash, this description, you ever notice at night, as you crawl into bed, all of a sudden your house makes all sorts of strange sounds? Isn't it amazing that it only starts making those sounds when you get into bed at night? It's like so weird. And if you're home alone and there's no one, then it gets really loud. It's strange, right? Like, how does the house know to do that just when you're alone and it's at night? And the answer, of course, is... Correct. The house doesn't actually know that you're scared and alone and it's dark. It's silent. When you crawl into bed and you finally turn that phone off and the radio and the television and the phone, everything is done and there's nobody awake and it's quiet outside, all of a sudden, every creak in the house you can hear. The hum of the air conditioner, which has been there the whole time, but you don't notice because there's a lot of distraction. When everything is silent, I hear that air conditioner. I do live near an airport. I didn't realize. Because in the day, like, you forget about it. But all those sounds, all those distractions that get pushed into the background, all of a sudden, I didn't realize my house makes a lot of noise. And Hashem reveals himself at Har Sinai. There's a bas kol that comes out from Har Sinai. Enochi Hashem Elokecha. And the Medrash says, what did you to hear it? You want to hear Hashem's presence in the world when it's silent, when there's no distraction, there are no animals making noise, the angels in heaven are not saying, the voice emanates the way the Chazal described. That voice is there. It's Yotzei Mehar Chorev every day, 24 hours a day. If only we could hear it, but it continues always. It's just hard to hear it in the world. This medrash, Rav Pinkus points out right after the introductory paragraph that we read earlier, what happens on Shabbos? On Shabbos, there is this sense everything is shoves umivutal. All of human activity, creation, being involved, invested in our malacha, stops. And what happens when we stop all of our activity and all of our actions? What do we hear? Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. That unity of Hashem, which is its own big concept, which is so hard to pick up on all week long. There's so much going on, questions that we have, theological questions. We're just worried about our own parnasa and carpools and kids and where am I going to park when I come to a shir? It's always so late. I'm running. All of these things. You can't hear that sound when you're running around with all the other things we're running around with. But when Shabbos is shoves umivutal, we can hear a vaychulu. And why is it so important? It's now going back to what Rav Hirsch said. It's in the stop that I know there was a creator in the first place. Because there's only a creator who can say, and now, ha'olam dai. Enough. Enough creation. Now we're going to have a concept of menucha. We have a little bit more time before we take a little break. A little bit more we have to do. So, again, refers in paragraph 5, it's the ending of creation that creates this revelation of this ability to recognize Hashem as the source. Let's just go to paragraph 6 and 7 on the next page in your refers, on top, middle of page 56. a free-willed, I'm just doing the underline, a free-willed mind and a free almighty will rules over us, restraining us within certain limits and thus making us what we are. This concept is the fundamental concept against an idea of a natural creation that just goes on its own. Because if creation was natural and it just happened, then there should be no concept of restraint, of holding yourself back from anything. Because whatever a person either wants or thinks is a natural, you can do whatever you want. Why are there rules? The only concept that we have rules, and we have a lot of rules, 613 of them, that concept can only come from a creator who said, I made this, and I said, stop, to my world, and now I want you to live in that world. So when we say Shabbos is the source of our belief in Hashem as a creator, which it is, the depth of that is that in my stopping from doing what I would normally or naturally do, that we put a hold on everything, testifying that Hashem did that to creation, that he actively stopped. Not that he was finished and therefore had nothing left to do. No. He stopped is a testimony to an active creator, which is, again, an underlying belief that I'm not here to tell you that there's a creator. You know that. But the depth of that understanding and how that's revealed through Shabbos. Vayichulu, everything is limited in size and purpose. Everything has received, and I'm reading source 7, paragraph 7 in Refersh. Everything has its allotted measure of material and energy has been assigned its time of development, its own kind. The idea of being assigned, the idea of having a limit, the idea of having a measure, the idea of having rules of things that I can do and can't do, I can eat and can't eat, when I can be creative and when I can't, all of that is included. Let me do one more thing. One more quick thing. I know you want to break. I need to break. One more thing. We need to do the word malacha. That is source 12, paragraph 12. This idea of malacha, it's 11 really, sort of 11. That we call what Hashem did a malacha, work. So he first writes in his beautiful language, everything that God created is called melachto. Mikol melachto asher asa. Malacha does not denote work in the sense of labor. That is the most complicated and confusing thing when we say, you can't work on Shabbos, you can't do malacha. Striking a match is so tough, so hard. Walking outside, carrying a pen, you know, that's malacha? It's not labor. It's in the sense of completion or accomplishment. Now here's his linguistic poetry. Labor, which is not what malacha is concerned only with the toil or the effort entailed in activity, without regard to the result. However hard you work, that's labor. Did you finish the job? I don't know. Were you successful? But I labored because I worked hard. Malacha, by contrast, is not on how hard did you work. It's only concerned with a result, an objective, a product. Did you create, produce, do something? That's a malacha. Labor is how hard did you work to get it. When Hashem did malacha, that means he produced and created things. Was it hard for him? I doubt it. But malacha is something was created. Malacha is simply the feminine form of the root of the word of a malach. A malach, just like a malach, is an agent, an executor of an idea or intention of another. In the spiritual world, Hashem wants something done, he creates a malach. You do this. My malacha is my saying, I want something done, and malacha is that which, the thing that executes the idea or intention of something intelligent. Do this. Any material that an intelligence is endowed with a purpose is a malacha. Last paragraph 13, top of the next page, clearly only an intelligent being, God, far below man, can create malacha. When you want to know, why can't we do malacha on Shabbos? We're going to talk about this. If I wanted to express that Hashem created the world, shouldn't I do malacha on Shabbos to say, just like Hashem created the world in 6 days, I want to do malacha in order to celebrate. And we do the opposite. Hashem created the world on the 6th and rested on the 7th, and so therefore I don't do malacha. Malacha is directed, purposeful activity that said that Hashem created, which is evidenced by the fact that he stopped on the 7th. And so when we stop all of our malacha, we're testifying to that. And
being able to hear that Hashem Echad that reverberates through the world only on Shabbos when everything else stops in the same, we can't hear it in the same way. We have a lot more to discuss. I'm already way out of time. So we'll continue. We didn't get to everything I wanted to do. We'll finish, and then we'll go on to the other psukim to describe the concept of Shabbos. Mirtz Hashem in future weeks. Have a great day.